taking care of a little of the housekeeping. Everyone who came today received a copy of Parallels on DVD. And of course, your MacBook may or may not have a DVD drive. If you need a USB key, they have them out front. So just go out there and you can use the USB key to install it. And that'll enable you to also install the Windows 8. And so that you can start development on your Mac today. All right? I am Aaron Hillegas. I have a company called Big Nerd Ranch. And we are best known. We do a lot of different types of development. We do iOS development, Android development, we do HTML, and we do Windows 8 development. But what we're most famous for is iOS programming. And really, there is no one less likely to be up here telling you about Windows 8 programming than I am. My career and the life of my company has benefited tremendously from Apple's meteoric rise to superiority in this tablet space. So then, given that I've spent a lot of my career invested in the Apple technologies, why would I possibly get up and tell you how and why to do Windows 8 programming? And here's the thing, is that it's not really about whether Apple is good and Microsoft is bad. It's that monopoly powers are always bad. It makes for an unhealthy industry. It makes for less innovation in the space. So when we look at what's happening in tablet computing, we really see that sort of the next 10 years of programming is really going to be defined by these post-PC technologies, tablets and phone programming. And we really want to make sure that that is a very healthy ecosystem. So at Big Nerd Ranch, we've been looking at the different tablets. We've done a lot of work with Android, and it's all right. But really in terms of thinking about what is going to be the viable alternative to the iPad, the Windows 8-based tablets are what we feel are the most elegant and compelling alternative to that technology. I'm not going to tell you one is better or worse than the other. What I'm going to tell you is that we need to maintain diversity in the system so that there's competition. Not only competition for consumers, but also competition for developers, so that the companies who are now selling our apps for us, right? Apple has their store. It's the only way to get an app onto an iOS device to customers is through their store, and Windows has their app store. We need to make sure that we keep them honest by keeping both ecosystems alive. And so politically, it's a little bit scary for me to stand up here and say we should all spend some time learning how to do Windows 8 programming, because I know that my normal constituents are probably very angry that I am dealing with the dark side. But really, the world has turned. And Apple's dominance in the tablet space has made them the big player. And in this case, Microsoft is sort of playing catch-up. They're number two. And I am the kind of guy who always roots for number two, because number two is what creates competition within the system. So politically, I don't have any problem standing up here and telling you, Windows 8, take a look. But also, there's the question of why should you? That is, you have only so much time in the day. You know that the iOS ecosystem is healthy. Why would you possibly write a Windows 8 application? The answer really is about devices. And there was a little bit of confusion when I started this. I was following Twitter, and I saw that a lot of people thought I was going to be talking about Windows Phone 8, which is a fine platform. But really what I'm here to talk about is Windows 8 development. We will do a session that is specifically on reusing your code that you wrote for Windows 8 and reusing it on Windows Phone 8. But really the focus of this is about Windows 8, which is desktop computers and tablets. And in particular, what I want to talk about is what they call the Windows Store apps. And some of these will never be in the store, right? A lot of the applications that Big Nerd Ranch writes, for example, are used within large enterprises, and they're only distributed to the employees, and they never go in the store. And our enterprise customers are very excited. They have loved the iPad, but they've never really loved making this transition from a Microsoft-only world into a Microsoft and Apple world. So we know that a lot of our enterprise customers are very excited about the Surface tablet, for example, for their mobile workers. And we want to be able to reach that. So what is the opportunity? Well, when you think about Mac devices, there's about 32 million being used right now. iOS devices, almost 200 million devices. Android, 345 million devices. Windows 7 is almost 700 million devices. This is in what was sold in 18 months, correct? 690 million copies were sold. So this is an incredible number, right? When you think about the fact that on the planet there's about 7 billion people, so every 10 people there's one legit Windows 7 license. So we're talking about reaching a huge market. And the store is still relatively new. So there's a lot less apps on the Windows Store than there are on the Apple Store. And there are a lot more devices that can run Windows 8. Now, there aren't more devices yet. There's still people are buying it. But it's selling at a good clip. And everyone who gets Windows 8 is going to have access to the Windows Store. So it's a lot of opportunity here. Okay? All right. I thought I would just show you what the user experience was like. A lot of you are coming from the iPad, and it's a little bit different, and some of it's kind of cool, and I thought I'd point out the cooler aspects of it. So if you'll indulge me for a moment. This is, as you can probably imagine, not what I usually do in terms of demonstrating how a computer is used. I usually teach people how to do programming, so I may not be as smooth as the guy who works at the Microsoft Store. But this is the start screen. So it used to be there was a start button. And I actually went and I saw a lecture to Microsoft customers about the new Windows 8 experience. And the customers were enraged. They were like, what do you mean there's no start button? We've always had a start button. There's no start button. And to me, this was ridiculous because this is wildly more effective. There's all sorts of information about my apps. There's the live tiles which give me information. But what I realized was that Microsoft had gone out a limb. They knew, right? They have focus groups. They knew they were going to make people angry, and they did it anyway. And this is sort of the sign of a good strategic decision. If you make a strategic decision that doesn't piss somebody off, it's not a very strategic decision. And so you can see that Microsoft is really being pushed to innovate into this new space and bring in new customers and new devices as well. So this is the first thing you should notice, is that there is a different user experience. One of the things that's kind of nifty, so they have a lot of these panels that slide right and left. And when we talk about pinch to zoom, on the iOS, it's just making things bigger and smaller. But on Windows 8, they have what's called semantic zoom, where it sort of changes the format so that you can see more information. So let's say, for example, that I am, I'm going in, I'm looking at what's happening in my social network. So they have a people app. And I have a lot of people in my life. So that's sort of the A's. If I want to be able to get to see someone in particular, if I pinch, I actually get a different view. It just doesn't just make it smaller. I get a view that means something, that enables me to navigate very quickly in that larger view. So I could go to Jay. I have a friend, Jen Sterling. She's got a little PR firm. Here she is. And I can drill down on her. So we get this idea of at every scale, the user has information they can actually use. They call this semantic zoom. The live tiles are very nifty, and maybe I'd like to have information that about Jen available right on the main screen, the start screen. So anytime I'm inside an application, they work hard to enable you to use all the pixels on the screen for the content. Overall, these tablet devices are a lot about consuming data. And so you don't want to have a lot of Chrome. You want to have a lot of place where the user can look at the information. So instead of having the Chrome there all the time, you can bring it up when you need it. So if you swipe from the top of the screen, you get the app bar. And the app bar has the different controls for manipulating what you're seeing. So in particular, on this one, there's a button that says Pin to Start. And so now I have created a new live tile in the start screen with Jen's face on it. And this is nice because it enables you to bookmark not only applications that you commonly use, but you actually drill down inside the application and bookmark particular things within it. So it makes it easy to navigate into particular places you use a lot. Okay, so far? All right. One of the gestures that they have on the Windows 8 platform that we do not have is this drag down to select. So this is something that on iOS, often you'll have a button that says edit, and it will put it into a new mode where you can delete things or select them in some way. In Windows 8, if you touch something and you drag down on it, it becomes selected. So let's say I have decided that I'm not going to be using Access or OneNote for a while. I can select those by dragging down on them. And the app bar pops up to say, what do you want me to do with these selected items? And I can say, just unpin those from the start screen. And this is a pretty common sort of a user interface idiom, and it's one we don't have. It's not immediately evident. This one took me a little while to figure out. And that'll be an interesting thing to see how quickly users pick up on that particular part of the touch language. Okay, so far? Questions? Yeah?
Is that only on the start screen?
No. So if, for example, if you're in Photos, here's some photos. Let me get one with a few different photos. Here we go. Here's pictures of my children. Pull down. Oh, I've already selected. Let me clear the selection. I can drag, and I can select multiple pictures in the camera. So it is actually a pervasive idiom that you'll see in different places. This is kind of a fun example also of the Charms menu, which I think is a ridiculous name. So it's sort of Japanese schoolgirl-esque. But at any time in any application or in the start screen, you can swipe in from the right, and you get a standard set of these charms. And so, for example, there's a share charm. And since I've selected a couple of pictures, I can hit share. And now it gives me the option of putting those up on my SkyDrive or emailing them to someone. If I had social networking applications installed, they would say, do you want to share these out on Twitter or Facebook as well? So what's interesting about this Charms menu is that it creates a way for applications to advertise their existence. So I have these pictures. If I installed your social networking app, when I said share, your app would appear as one of the options. It also means that as a programmer, you don't have to take care of every single possibility. You don't have to think, well, I'm going to do Facebook and Twitter now. And then when a third version comes out, and you're like, oh, I guess I got to deal with Instagram and whatever. The user will have those apps. And as the new networks appear, the new ways of sharing appear, those apps will take care of it for you. So your app has to do less in order to take advantage of sharing. Okay? All right. So it's an opportunity for people to see your app, and it's also an opportunity to write less code and still get all the sharing benefits. Let's go back to the start screen. Let me show you another thing on the share on the Charms menu. This is search. On iOS, we have the idea of searching. It's spotlight-based, and it goes through the whole file system looking for stuff. But it's nice sometimes to be able to search for things for a particular app. So for example, let's say I was going to Moscow. I could say, OK, I'm going to Moscow. There are no apps on my system that are called Moscow. But let's look in, here we go, travel. Is there anything interesting for Moscow in the travel app? And there is indeed a whole page on Moscow. They got photos. This is fun. This is the panorama views, so you can look around the church, so you'll know what you're going to be seeing when you get to Moscow. All right. If I go back to the search menu, I can say, well, what about inside? What about weather? What's the weather look like in Moscow today? Is the Moscow, Russia? Select that. And it will go and get the weather for me. One more example. So I've got the Cocktail Flow application here. And what does that have that has to do with Moscow? Well, it's got the Moscow Mule, the drink that made vodka popular in America. You can drill down and you can see the ingredients, the preparation. Okay? Just like iOS, this is a very task-centric approach. The application takes over the whole screen. So right now, I can just look at the cocktails. One of the things that's kind of nifty is that it you can tile it. This is called snapped mode, where you can say, I just want this ingredient to appear on the left-hand side. And then over here, I'm just going to swipe in from the left. I can see, oh, what's the weather like in Russia again? Is it Moscow mule season? If you don't want that one, you can slide back again. And now I can see the travel stuff as well. You can change the way it's split. So this is great, right? It's nice to be able to put your mail up in the snap mode and still be able to work in the larger area of the screen. Notice, however, as a programmer, it is a challenge for you that you need to now deal with a lot of different aspect ratios. You've got the landscape format. You've got the portrait format, because they can turn it sideways. You've got snapped, which is just one quarter of the screen. And then you've got, what is the other one called? Three quarters of the screen. Filled, the filled version, which is three quarters of the screen. So it's something to think about as you're thinking about your design, is how can we deal with all these different aspect ratios. Also remember that you can deal with different sizes of screens. So if you have a huge screen with a lot of pixels, you can put more information on it, whereas if you're dealing with something very small, less information. One of the things that you may be wondering about as a programmer is what can you develop in? This is Cut the Rope. This is a kid's game. It was on iOS. It's now on tablet. It's great fun. Get the cardboard box. You get it, see it delivered to your house. I'm going to start with a really easy level because I'm not that good at this game. And the idea is that you slide across, you get stars, you feed the creature at the bottom. This application was written entirely in JavaScript and HTML. So when we think about developing for iOS, right, there's the Cocoa Touch libraries. And then if you write in JavaScript, there's a limited subset of things that you can actually do from JavaScript. On Windows 8, JavaScript is actually a first-class citizen and can access all the APIs that are part of the Windows runtime. So it's actually a very compelling story being able to actually write your applications entirely in JavaScript and HTML. If you look at the Mail app, the user interface, what do we have here? Let me find something mild. Here we go, alumni letter. Has anyone noticed how your alumni association can find you? If I move to a new location, like 3 days later, my alumni association can find me? I always thought that this would be a way to find people, like Osama bin Laden. You just contact his alumni association because they know where he is. This Mail app, the user interface is entirely written, once again, in JavaScript and HTML. And when I heard this, I was shocked because I thought, you're going to do all this stuff for syncing with an IMAP server from HTML and JavaScript? And the answer was, no, that wasn't what happened. What happened was that the underlying logic of dealing with the IMAP server, for example, was written in C++. And then they wrapped that as a Win runtime component, and they used it from inside the JavaScript. So the user interface is JavaScript, but actually all the dealing with the web servers is C++. So you can also write applications in C++. A real common reason why people do this is for performance, in particular games. So here's the Pinball FX2. This was written in C++ using DirectX. So DirectX is what Windows programmers use instead of OpenGL. A lot of the same ideas. It's just a little bit different. You can't hear the music, but I can. And here's the game. It's kind of nifty. You can scroll in and out. You can see all the 3D. So this is not just rendered once. It's actually being rendered live in 3D. And I can shoot the ball. And I'm a terrible pinball player, but I could play for a while. If you're writing games, this is a great way to go. There's also the Unity engine, which enables you to use their library, which talks to DirectX. And you can program their... You can talk to the Unity library in C# or JavaScript. Okay. So that's one of the options for building applications. And then there's Visual Basic and XAML, and also C# and XAML. The rest of these 2 days, we're really going to emphasize the C# XAML approach because that's the one that's most analogous to the way iOS programmers work in Objective-C with nib files. So we're gonna focus on that one. It's a very popular, very efficient way to write your applications. Okay, that's what I wanted to say about that. I showed you Cocktail Flow. That's an example of a XAML app written in C#. Let's see. Oh, going back. Let me get back to my slides. That's the first slide. One of the differences that we've noticed as we've been writing applications for Windows 8 is that the design approach is slightly different. So I already talked about some of the different gestures. But when you're coming from iOS, sorry, yes?
Some of these icons, why they're bigger? Did you mention it?
I didn't mention why some of the question is, why are some of the icons bigger? So if you have an exciting live tile, you probably want to try and claim two spaces. So let's see. I got Jen here. I can actually here. If I this game, I don't want it to be as big. Let's clear the selection. I can make it smaller, so it claims less space on my start screen, or I can make it bigger. There are two sizes, and when you're laying out your live tile, you have to be able to deal with either one. If it's exciting, you can try and claim two. If it's not, I think it's more stylish just to go with one. Is that the party line from Microsoft? Yep. Microsoft design. The Microsoft approach to design is a little bit different from iOS's. So in particular, you got the live tiles. This is crucial. There's a lot that's the same. So that's the first thing I should tell everybody, is there's a lot that's the same. Very task-centric. You deal with typically one application at a time. The application is relatively simple. There's no menus. People expect there to be animation, which indicates what the computer's doing at any given moment. People expect direct manipulation, so you should be able to touch something and select it instead of anything else. Just touch things to deal with them. So this is the same. Both iOS and Windows have these same basic approaches. Yes?
Good question.
Go.
Are these slides going to be made available?
I think they are. These slides are going to be made available.
Yeah.
Yes. Differences. When you're coming from iOS, we work very hard to implement metaphors for the real world. So, for example, if you go into the Notes app, it actually looks like a notepad. The word these days is skeuomorphism. And we work really hard. If you go into the newsstand app, you can actually see the light shining on the oil-rubbed oak, right? It's stunning, and we spend a lot of our time trying to create those stunning simulations of the real world. You'll see a lot of shadows. You'll see a lot of reflections. We do a lot of rounded corners. When you're coming into the Microsoft world, they are more devoted to the idea of being authentically digital. They say, let's not worry about what a notepad looks like. A lot of children have never dealt with a yellow legal pad. Why should we make it look like a yellow legal pad? It should be just optimized for the expression of creating and looking through your notes. So they do a lot less of this metaphors for the real world. Also, there's a lot of emphasis on creating space for the content, so getting the Chrome out of the way most of the time so that the user can devote their pixels to content. So content instead of Chrome is their catchphrase. You'll also notice that they deal a lot more with type. So you see a lot of words instead of icons. And this is, I think, a huge step forward because often when and Microsoft in the history has been particularly bad at this, is they'll have a toolbar with 208 different icons, and one of them will be a box that's half red and half white, and I'll just be looking at it, and I cannot figure out what that button is until I actually click it and see what it does. Whereas if they just had the word, you know, save, right? Now they have floppy disk. My children have no idea what a floppy disk is. So the floppy disk representing save doesn't make any sense. But the word save, everybody knows what that means. And you'll see that in this Windows Store apps, they have a lot more text than icons. There are still some icons. And there are also a lot more photographs. So if there's a photograph available, they'll use it. So in the live tiles in particular, you'll see a lot of photographs. So it's a little bit different. It's 95% the same. And the 5% that's different is actually pretty cool. There's also a little bit difference in the touch language. And in particular, this idea of swipe to select was one of the biggest ones that surprised me. Oh, also swiping in from the edges to get different menus. So swiping in from the left takes you back to the last application. Swiping in from the top or bottom brings up the application bar. Swiping in from the right brings up the charms menu. The charms menu, I didn't talk about this, but the charms menu also includes the settings and devices. So settings, whatever application you're in, you'll see the settings for that application. Okay, so far? Yeah, question?
So in general for Windows 8, is there an emphasis on horizontal scrolling rather than vertical scrolling?
You know, you'll see both. A lot of times when you see a grid of stuff, it'll be scrolling from right to left, whereas if you see text, often it'll be scrolling up and down. I wouldn't say one is over the other. I think they just use them differently. Is that fair?
I think horizontal is prevalent in
Windows.
So you can do either one.
Yeah. Right, if you're going to allow for pull down to select, you can't scroll up and down. Right. Let me show you a little bit about the store. So everybody who has Windows 8, or pretty much any Microsoft product that's up to date, right, will have the Windows App Store. And here's the store. You scroll back and forth and find applications. And then we could drill down and get the information. Here you could install it. It's got the ratings. If you step through the different pages, you can see the reviews. There's a couple of things that's especially nifty about the Windows Store. So let's go and look at top paid applications. Here is a, not social, I meant at the very top. Top paid application. Here's one that I was kind of surprised to see up here, Package Tracker. So it's an application for tracking packages with all the major carriers. One of the things that's kind of nifty, as an iOS programmer who does sell apps through the store, it's very hard to charge more than 99 cents for your app. And the reason why is because you can't do free trials. The person has to pay their 99 cents to figure out if they like your app or not. With the Windows Store, they have the ability, you can put it up in the store, you can say, and the user can take a 7-day free trial or whatever time period you want. And at the end of that time, they'll get a message that they either have to buy the app or they don't get to use it anymore. So this is going to be a huge step forward in being able to charge more for your applications. They also get 50 cents right away because the cheapest price in the Windows Store is $1.49. So that gets you, at least changes users' expectations 50 cents. But I think the big win really is this idea of being able to do free trials. Let me show you another kind of nifty thing. A lot of these applications are also associated with some sort of a website. So let's say I am in Internet Explorer and I'm at the Netflix website. All right, I'm logged in. I am clearly a Netflix user. Notice the little plus down here by this wrench. This is an indication that there is a Windows 8 app for this website. There's actually a meta tag which indicates to the browser that there is an application that goes with it. Indeed, there's a Netflix app on the Windows 8 store. And so if I just click on that button while I'm on this website, it will say one of the options is get the app for this site. And if I click on that, it takes me to the Netflix page, and I can install it. So it makes it really easy for people who are coming to your website to find the application that goes with it. Okay. Pretty cool? Once again, most of the stuff is the same, and that's going to be this theme that I keep coming back to. A lot of the stuff is the same. You sell your app through the store. It has to pass the standards that Microsoft has put forward. And a lot of those are the same as Apple's. Microsoft's requirements for privacy are actually a little bit more stringent. So if you're giving out personal information, it has to say it, and the person has to opt in, for example. So make sure you look through the submission requirements before you submit to the store. Yes?
Yeah, very quick question on the store. So a typical startup example is that someone may get an email with a link with a custom scheme.
Uh-huh.
And today on iOS, you have to, in your cloud, intercept that and do something. Does your store do something better that basically says, if I get a unique scheme and you don't have the app installed, I will direct you to the store?
All right, so the question is, you get an email with a URL that is not HTTP, it's a special scheme. On iOS, that can often trigger a particular application, but if you haven't installed that application, it doesn't know to go and look at the store and suggest, oh, maybe you need the LinkedIn app or something like that. And the question is, and the question was, is it my store? First of all, it's not my store. It's Microsoft's store. And so I am going to now turn to my Microsoft person and say, well?
Yeah, we do that.
He says, yeah, they do it. All right. Yeah, we're going to do a whole session on submitting to the store.
You can see it at the highest level. We'll show you how to code it later.
Yeah. It's the same deal. You sell it through the, then as it's selling, you get 70% of the revenues. Now, when it gets to over $25,000, then you start getting 85%. 80. I'm sorry, 80%. 80% of the revenues at that point. So they recognize that if you have done a high quality app, a popular app, that you should get a larger percentage of the revenues. All right, so that was my store demo. Let me get back to my slides. Let's see. Current slide. So the Windows Store. It's nice that we can do free demos. I actually really believe that this is a huge, huge step forward. And I'm really hoping that all the other app stores, the Google Play Store and the Apple Store, respond by doing similar things. The store also allows people to do third-party commerce without it having to go through Microsoft. So, for example, the Nook app. Inside the Nook app, you can actually buy books, and that is charged directly to Barnes & Noble without Microsoft taking their 30% cut of that. For people who are selling things through their applications, this is a huge step forward. It means that, especially for very large ticket items, there is not an Apple tax on every single one of them. So that is another compelling thing. There's analytics, so behind the store, there's a website where you go in and see when people get excited, like you correlate with what you tweet. There's also an advertising platform, so you can reserve a little space in your application for Microsoft to put ads in it, and you'll start getting revenues from those. So there is a genuine business case there, and they have looked at what the other app stores are doing and have attempted to improve upon it. Okay? All right. This is the standard Microsoft diagram of Windows 8. All the desktop applications are the same pretty much as Windows 7 apps, right? They have menus, they talk to the Win32 API. So you can go and you can write those applications. That's not what Big Nerd Ranch is passionate about, so I'm not going to talk about that stuff today. Instead, I'm going to talk about the Windows Store apps. And the Windows Store apps all talk to these WinRT APIs. But there's a lot of different faces on them, depending on which language you're more comfortable with and which language is appropriate for the problem that you're attacking. So if you're writing in C and C++, you can use XAML to help you initialize your data structures, especially the user interface stuff. And then you can use the C and C++ APIs to talk to the WinRT runtime. C# and Visual Basic, typically you're going to be using XAML with those. Once again, you can talk to the WinRT libraries. One second. And then from HTML, JavaScript, you can use all those same APIs as well. Okay.
So, desktop apps use older versions of the operating system?
No, it's not that it's older. So you can write them today for Windows 8, but it's a different user experience. So the The Windows Store apps are more iPad-like. They are expected that you're going to be dealing with them as touch. They are full screen. They don't typically have menus.
But those are only for Windows. That's only. Oh, I see. The whole thing here is slides. Windows 8.
Windows 8, yeah. And then when you go to the desktop on Windows 8, you can run any old Windows application with menus and things.
Or Windows Store apps.
Or Windows Store apps. But Windows Store apps run from the start menu as opposed to in the desktop. There's sort of these sort of switch modes at that point. So let me show you. If I go back to my start window, there is actually a tile here that says desktop. And right now I'm running PowerPoint on the desktop because PowerPoint is not a Windows Store app. Here it is. It's not a very good demonstration of the desktop. What? Escape. Get out of there. I can minimize it. And now I have just plain old Windows. Here I'm running Excel. So these are not Windows Store apps. And these are the ones that I've been showing you before where they take over the whole screen. Those are Windows Store apps. Is that all right?
The distinction is for the smartphone or not?
The distinction is not for the smartphone. These are all running on Windows 8, not the phone. The distinction in terms of hardware is the ARM processors. Is that fair? All the ARM-based tablets will only run Windows Store apps. And then the very special limited set that Microsoft gives you as well. Okay. Yep. Oh, I'm sorry, yes. I will remember to repeat all the questions because I forget that the audience at home can't hear me. My mistake. Okay. All right, let's get back to the slides. As a developer, you're going to be using the tools. You will not be using Xcode anymore. The IDE is Visual Studio. The Visual Studio is free. You can download it from the Microsoft site. Instead of Interface Builder, they have a tool called Blend, which is for laying out your XAML files in a very graphical manner. Any graphics designer would be really comfortable with this. It makes it easy to adjust the colors and the gradients and the layout of the different objects. There will be a demonstration of the tools coming up a little later, but the important part is that you get them for free, and we hope you'll try them out. For me, being an expert in iOS, one of the scary things is that there are already millions and millions of Windows programmers out there. And I feel a little self-conscious that I may be starting from the beginning as a beginner and not taking advantage of the advantage I have in the world. It would be embarrassing to have to go back and start from zero. But as I've started dealing with it, I've realized that I'm not starting from zero. And so I wanted to point that out because it's not as hard to make the transition as you think it would be. The design, although there are differences, a lot of it's the same. If you've already been designing iOS applications, the jump to designing Windows 8, Windows Store apps is not a big jump. It's direct manipulation, full screen, no menus. You're going to feel comfortable. The languages. If you've been writing in Objective-C or Java, you're not going to find C-sharp surprising at all. It's a very straightforward language, single inheritance, object-oriented, garbage-collected language. If you've been creating zip files, the idea of the XAML file is not going to be surprising to you. There's a lot of parallels. You just have to get used to the differences. And then every time we write a iOS application, there's typically a web service behind it. And those web services, you've already written them, you're going to be able to access them from your Windows 8 client in a very similar manner. So you don't need to rewrite that. You are not starting from zero. That's what I wanted to tell you, is that over this day, you're going to see a lot of stuff that's surprising and strange. That's because we picked the stuff that's surprising and strange to show you. All right, we want this to be useful to iOS programmers. We're not going to talk a lot about the stuff that's the same. The Cocoa Touch libraries give you a lot of capabilities. And to a large extent, the Windows Runtime APIs give you the same capabilities, just slightly different. Right? So instead of OpenGL, this is probably the biggest difference. Instead of OpenGL, they have DirectX. But you're going to have the same idea of animation and threads and notifications and parsing XML and creating XML and dealing with buttons and sliders and things on the screen. There's a lot in parallel that's the same. Sorry? Blocks. So they don't call them blocks. They have lambda expressions, and I'll talk about that later. But same idea. One of the things that Microsoft has done for us, people trying to go from iOS to Windows 8, is to give us a pointer about what is the analogous data structure on their platform. So I just wanted to demonstrate this. There's a website. If you go to aka.ms/iOSmap, you'll see this website. It's the Windows 8 mapping tool. So let's say that you know that you need an UI button on iOS. You would have created a UI button. You hit go into the search field. It will go and find. All right, maybe not. Here we go. The class UI button. Similar to the Win class's button. If you go into the documentation, it will tell you how to use the class button, which is in the windows.ui.xaml.controls namespace. Right there. I promise it works.
What was the URL?
The URL, it's a long one, but this will redirect you there. aka.ms/iOSmap. I demonstrated these the charms menu, and this is actually a subset of what they call contracts. And there will be a whole talk on contracts, but I did want to point out that as you're thinking about writing an application, really think about how can I implement sharing and search so that when someone is using some other application and they go to do a search, it brings your application to their attention. It will help sell your application. It will make it more in the user's mind. It's nice that this is consistent through all the application. It creates a constant user experience. Okay? Questions so far? So it's 2 days of instruction. I got the light lifting, so I'm doing this introduction talk, and I will also do an introduction to C# for Objective-C programmers. We'll do tools next. We'll take a break for lunch. Microsoft is giving us box lunches that we can eat in here. When you're done, take your box lunch out and throw it away because they're worried about the mice. Not that there's any mice. During that time, there's going to be a panel up here, and I'm going to sit on the panel. We're going to answer questions. And then I'll do the C# talk. We'll then talk about asynchronous programming, which is actually pretty compelling in C#. And Sean, one of my guys, is going to do that talk. We'll do an introduction to XAML. Eric in the back, he's another one of my guys. He'll be doing that talk. And we'll go and do consuming web services with Sean, and then contracts back with Eric, and then we'll have lab time. And at lab time, we are going to be able to do installing. You can maybe get started on your application. We'll see what happens at that point. At 6 o'clock, there is going to be social time, so we're going to have some drinks. We're going to hang out, talk about our lives in Windows 8 and how they intersect. And then tomorrow, come back here at 9 in the morning, we'll talk about process lifecycle management. So these store apps often have to be suspended and to make space for the other, right? These devices are not as powerful as your desktop. So we're going to talk about how you deal with that, storing state when it's being suspended. We'll deal with notifications and live tiles. Then map SkyDrives. We're going to deal with hardware and events, lunchtime. We'll do C++ for Windows 8. Azure is Microsoft's cloud services, and I was very skeptical of it. I went to build this year, and I saw the whole talk, and I actually think it's pretty compelling. So take a look at that. And then we'll talk about how we can reuse the code that we write for Windows 8 on Windows Phone 8. And then finally, the final talk will be submitting your application to the Windows Store. And that's the plan for the next 2 days. Questions on that? All right. That's me. I'm Aaron Hillegas. I will be around for the next 2 days. I'll be happy to talk with you and answer any questions that I can. I'm going to turn it over to... I'm going to answer some questions first, and then I'm going to turn it over to Jaime Rodriguez.
Go back to the slide that had the Wi-Fi and all that.
Okay.
Just so that they see it, because a lot of people arrived late and missed it.
I have a slide that's just housekeeping details. This is it. Here is the network. It's open. You don't need a password. Here's the hashtag if you're talking on Twitter. It's a great place to ask questions. Type it in, especially you people at home. With that hashtag, we are monitoring it, and we'll be happy to answer those questions. The bathrooms, you walk out, you turn right, go up the hall, you'll see a sign that says restrooms. And just so you know, they are recording these presentations and streaming them. So if you are in the witness protection program, you may not want to raise your hand. All right? And then, once again, we have a little get-together tonight.
Yep. So you can ask questions to the hashtag plus iOS to Windows, hash iOS to Windows, just because we have a lot of sessions that are tight on time. We also have a lot of Microsoft and .NET and BigNet Ranch people, and we're all wearing these name tags, so feel free to ask us any questions. There's devices outside on the hallway, so you can go play with a Windows device and see what the experience looks like, see a little bit of what Aaron showed you on stage, play firsthand with it. And then the last one, which was missing from there, everybody should have their Parallels license. And if you got the DVD for Windows, we have USB sticks outside that you can get the USB stick for Windows so you can install it if you don't have a DVD on your MacBook Pro. So everything that you need should be there.
And we're having a raffle.
Yep. End of day, we'll have raffles every day. Can we tell them? So we will have a Surface device and a phone every day. So that, we'll ask you a few questions like, hey, how did we did? What do you want to learn more about? So we can improve the training, and then, we'll raffle based on those results. When you turn your survey, we'll raffle against those that return the surveys. Give him a few questions, and I'll get Bart.
All right. All right. So the first question that I have is, will you be talking about cross-platform games and what options developers have? Overall, we're not going to talk too much about cross-platform stuff in particular. We're going to be talking about the platform, and the examples we're going to be using are using C# and XAML. We will talk about C++ tomorrow on Windows 8 specific stuff, so that would be one way to reuse code between the different platforms is to write it in C++. But overall, the emphasis is not on cross-platform games, I'm sorry. Brendan asks, why should I port all my apps now? Should I wait until Windows 8 takes off? Okay, that's really a question for you. And so if you think about 2009, if you wrote a fart app, you did really well because you claimed that space. Angry Birds, it's an okay game, but I don't think it would have been nearly as popular if they had waited a year to put it in the store. So it's just a decision. Do you want to wait to see if the platform matures, or do you want to sort of stake out your territory in the new frontier? Other questions? Yep.
So I'm here because I manage a group of mobile devs, a site that's got millions of users.
Okay.
And I also do consulting stuff on the side, but really the thing I have to figure out is if I'm going to support Windows 8 iPhone, because we're only going to support Windows 8 phone, because that's all my group does, what do I need in terms of resources and stuff? So, I'm a developer, I know how to look at stuff like that.
Right.
All
right, so the question is, hey, I'm only interested in Windows Phone 8. Should I walk out of this room right now?
okay, when should I be here?
Right. A lot of the ideas that we're talking about will be consistent between the phone and Windows 8. I think that you would find 80% of everything said today really relevant. In terms of what resources do you need, all you really need is your computer and Visual Studio, and that's enough.
It's competency too, right?
Competency.
People who know how to do that.
Right. And it's another platform, so there's all the same things. You're going to have to learn the surprising bits of C# and the surprising bits of XAML, but I think you'll find it all relatively familiar. And some of it's actually pretty cool. And yes, you'll have to download the Windows 8 phone SDK as well. Right. Okay. Question over here. Right, so the question is, how active is the community, in particular, putting forward open source libraries of stuff that other developers can use? There is a real Windows 8 open source community. In particular, there's a library called Callisto, which pretty much everybody uses. It has lots of handy things in it, like a date picker. So there is definitely a community. There are a lot of Windows programmers who are looking at this right now. It is active. Is there anything else I should say about that in particular, Jaime? The community? Open source components?
Is this on? Yeah. So we have the same community in a lot of cases, like to go back to open source, we have the same communities that you're familiar with. For example, like I work with SQLite a lot, Monogame. So in a lot of cases, there's a lot of cross-platform libraries that you'll be able to use. If you look at applications like Evernote, right, they have a lot of open source that they use within their app, a lot of libraries. So you know, everything that's open source in Windows is very easy to move on to Windows Store, to the Windows Store model. And a lot of the libraries that you're familiar with are there. And again, today is our first talk to iOS developers. You guys are first on the... So if you have libraries that you're really passionate about, come talk to one of the Microsoft guys. We have several people from C++ team here who are explicitly coming in to find out what we need to port, what we need to help with. Our libraries, you know, with regards to open source, we're pretty active. Git, everything, we're pretty active. There's a lot in there. You're going to hear a lot of Microsoft services that are open source, like our iOS services, our Azure Mobile services, everything, a lot of what you're going to hear in the next 2 days will be open source. So we're pretty active. And again, talk to us if there's something that you feel strongly about that we should have. We're happy to give it a try or contact the people and bring it in.
Okay. All right. I'm going to wrap it up then and turn it over to Bart. Bart is a designer. He specializes in design for Windows 8. And he is going to talk about what you should expect there.